Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. It is a Tuesday. Jerry Jones is feisty in Dallas, live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, Fox Sports Radio and right here in FS1. 1 hour from now, the official rule book of the world, The Herd Hierarchy, top 10 NFL teams. Joy Taylor is joining me today. Justin Herbert, quarterback for the LA Chargers, on the show today. We love him. He is amazing. He's an Oregon Duck, so I'm personally rooting for him.
That's exciting.
Yeah, no, he's a great kid. Can't wait to have the GM of the Chargers and I were texting last night. He's a great kid. He's such a wonderful story. All these guys, Burrow, Herbert, Kyler Murray, like if that's the future of the league, I'm all in. All right. Jerry's feisty.
Yeah, things are falling apart in Dallas.
We're going to get to that in just a second. Let's address what we watched last night. Sometimes you don't realize what you have. People in L.A. complain about Jared Goff. How about Chicago? They've been looking for a franchise quarterback since the 40s when they had Sid Luckman. I'm not joking. They have not had a franchise quarterback in 75 years. Like a really great, great quarterback. Since 2000, the Bears have had 24 guys take a stamp at quarterback. So when people criticize the Carson Wentzes and the Jared Goffs because they're not perfect, I just roll my eyes. Miami has never replaced Dan Marino. Still, John Elway, they've never really replaced him. They had an old Peyton Manning for a few years. Jared Goff's already been to a Super Bowl. Since Sean McVay has arrived, he's won 38 games, lost 16. His quarterback passer rating is 96. He's completed 64.5% of his throws. He currently has the highest fourth quarter passer rating in the entire league. And people are already nitpicking him. Folks, do you understand there's no perfect quarterback? Big Ben makes terrible throws still. Tom Brady's unathletic. So is Eli. Aaron Rodgers is too prickly and doesn't get along with everybody. Russell Wilson's frankly a little short. Sometimes he can't see guys and throws bad picks. And Breeze, suboptimal arm. Same with Matt Ryan. Even the quarterbacks we like that are young and good, like Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, you'd be like, oh, they're going to be stars. And all of a sudden the league gets a lot of them and you're like, well, they're good, but they got little holes in their game. How bad would Matt Nagy, how much would he die to have Jared Goff today? I hear this all the time. You know, in L.A., if you're not LeBron or Mookie Betts, we're just going to sell stock on you. Jared Goff's a really good quarterback. The rule in this league is find a good quarterback and just support him. And by the way, the Bears did with Trubisky, and Nagy's got a very good record with him. But all of us can see, Chicago can see, everybody can see, Trubisky has a really, really low ceiling. And if you've won Super Bowls, the Bears have won a Super Bowl, there's kind of a higher standard than Cleveland that, you know, you just want a guy that can win some games. You know, you'd like a Super Bowl, but you're realistic about that. In Chicago, they've won Super Bowls. They've been great before. So they really want to get a guy that can beat Aaron Rodgers, you know, that can beat the Russell Wilsons. But I look at this and I'm like, do you understand, Los Angeles, how hard it is to find a quarterback? You start looking around the league and everybody wants a perfect quarterback. And I look at Jared Goff and the answer, of course, is not through free agency. There's a reason a quarterback hits the market. Cam, Kirk Cousins. There's a reason. It's not a career backup on his fifth team like Nick Foles. The answer in Chicago is what the answer was for the L.A. Chargers. You find a guy, Phillip Rivers, you get everything you can out of him, you move him, and then you go back to the draft. And sometimes, like the Chargers, you get lucky. You get two really good quarterbacks. And it doesn't happen very often. In New York, they had Eli. Daniel Jones even looks and plays sort of like Eli. Maybe they got another one. Today, they don't know. But Nick Foles was never the answer. This morning, the Rams are a legit 5-2. The Bears are a mirage 5-2 for one reason. It's not the coach. It is not the coach. If Matt Nagy was fired, he would have a job in 45 minutes. Can you imagine him in New York with Trevor Lawrence? Can you imagine him in Houston with Deshaun Watson? Atlanta with those weapons and Matt Ryan? Mitch Trubisky with Matt Nagy and not much else has a winning record in the NFL. It's not the coach. It's the quarterback. So anytime I hear people, you know, criticizing Carson Wentz and for that matter, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo or a Jared Goff, I'm like, slow down. Do you go ask people in Miami, go ask people in Denver how hard it is to find the guy. Jared Goff's been to a Super Bowl. If he's healthy in 10 years, he'll have been to another, at least one more. All right. Well, you know, I've said this before. Sometimes you hire a football coach and it takes a while to figure out if you've got the right coach. But if you've got the wrong coach, Jim Tom Sula, 49ers, Les Steckel, Minnesota, Rod Marinelli, Detroit. Like if you've got the wrong Rich Kotite, if you've got the wrong coach, Freddie Kitchens, Cleveland, it takes you about 6 games to figure it out. Sometimes it's hard to figure out if you've got the right coach. You know, he's good. He's not great, but he's pretty good, and he has ups and downs. It's just like in life. It may take years to figure out if the relationship you're in right now is going to be great. But if it's bad, you know it pretty quickly. Like it's, oh, hygiene issues. She throws stuff at me. He throws stuff at me. Like you can spot bad quickly. Dallas right now, this doesn't work. This is not close. Jerry Jones went on Dallas radio this morning. There's 2 bites. Let's play the first. And he says, I got my guy.
Certainly, we couldn't have anticipated being at this stage with our team this year. But if I were going to hire a head coach that we're going to be at this stage this year and work through this for the betterment of what's in store for us for the rest of the year and for what's for us in the future, I got my man.
That was the beginning of the interview. And then the interview went on, and Jerry got feistier and feistier. And I've said this. You can always tell who's going to win a presidential election because which side of the media feels more desperate. I'll leave that for you to figure out. Jerry's this angry because Jerry's not just angry at the question. Jerry's angry that he may have made a massive mistake, and he's going to have to own up to it soon. Listen.
Does your team have a leadership void?
We're in the offensive line.
Just overall,
seriously, where would you have a leadership void? Is it an experience void? Is it a talent void? Is it a leadership void? I'm not trying to be cute here. The answer is no. The answer is no.
I'm asking.
Well, just shut up and let me answer. No.
Jerry, when you go into the locker room, what I'm asking is, do you see the intangibles?
You're not asking me that. I gave you the answer. When I go into the locker room, there's no leadership void in my eyes.
Okay.
Now that's your answer. Let's move on.
Okay. Jerry's not mad at the question. He's mad at his decision, and he's embarrassed by it. And that's why he's super defensive. Those were legitimate questions. I worry that the Cowboys are becoming Al Davis at the end. Al Davis and Jerry have a lot in common. Pioneers, aggressive, smart, successful. They know football. Jerry played the game. Al was an assistant coach in the NFL for years. They know the game much more than 95% of the owners. They don't know it as much as they think, but they know the game. They took on the NFL. They're very similar. They're envied by the league. Took on the NFL and won. And then they get a little older, and they want control, and they can't handle a Bill Parcells. They can't handle a John Gruden, and they never, ever recover. You know, it's interesting with Dallas. When Jerry has allowed for a big personality, Jimmy Johnson's a big personality. Barry Switzer's a big personality. Bill Parcells' a big personality. When Jerry allowed that and wasn't threatened by it, the Cowboys won. I mean, Barry Switzer was not a great NFL coach. He's a legendary college coach, but he won. But when Jerry has hired guys he can control, that's what Al Davis did. Mike McCarthy and Chan Gailey and Jason Garrett and Wade Phillips and nice guys, but they kind of lack that leadership it, right? He's failed every single time. It's the same with Al Davis. When he had John Gruden, and John can lack this and that, but he's a leader. John is a leader. He's got a Mike Tomlin, Pete Carroll thing. He walks into a room. John Gruden has a presence. Bill Parcells has a presence. Barry Switzer's got a presence. Jimmy Johnson's got a presence. Jason Garrett doesn't. Doesn't mean he can't coach, but he doesn't have a presence. They're becoming the Raiders. The last 7-8 years with Al Davis, like you couldn't take him seriously. Like they were running their business different than everybody else. The Cowboys have become, to a fault, a family business, too insular. Will not take outside opinions. And I don't think Jerry this morning is mad at that guy asking the questions. I think Jerry's embarrassed. I think he's a smart guy who made a really bad choice, and he knows there's no way out but to get rid of Mike McCarthy.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So after last night's Monday Night Football game, we've got five teams. I want to stack up all the five-win teams, not name the Buccaneers in the NFC. Seattle, no defense. Green Bay, can't play physical. Arizona, talented but inconsistent. Chicago, no offense. Rams, some stars, good, but don't feel really special. And then there's Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. The NFC's always been deeper than the AFC, and I believe it is. There's fewer crappy teams. But the top of the NFC is weaker, and Tampa Bay is easily this morning the best team. Easily. The gap between Tampa Bay and two is much greater than the gap between, say, Kansas City and the two or the three or perhaps the four in the AFC. For 20 years, all we asked in the AFC was, who is going to beat Tom Brady? That's all we asked for 20 years. The NFC, though, was a carousel of good teams. Seattle, San Francisco, and Carolina got to a Super Bowl, Philadelphia, and Green Bay is very, very good. Tom's been here 7 weeks. It's over. It's over. Like, they're easily the best team in the NFC. It is very LeBron to the West. For years, we all talked about how good the West was. And then LeBron got out here, and you're like, well, Portland's kind of small and doesn't defend in the backcourt. And Dallas is interesting, but way too young. And then there's Houston, and they're small and talented. They're always talented, but dysfunctional. And the Clippers, well, they've always got good players, but where's the leadership? And you wake up, and you're like, oh, LeBron just breezed through all of them. The NFC looks so much tougher for years and years until LeBron arrived in the West and Brady arrived in the NFC. I saw this in the SEC. SEC fans, we got Tennessee and we got Florida. We got Georgia. We got LSU. We got Auburn. And Nick Saban said, oh, that's adorable. Arrived and all their coaches got fired four times. The SEC is all about Alabama and Saban. Urban Meyer takes over Ohio State. Everybody looks small. He didn't lose a game for 2 years. Folks, there's a lot of good out there. There's not a lot of great. There's not a lot of Saban. There's not a lot of Urban. There's not a lot of LeBron. There's not a lot of Brady. He's been in the NFC for 7 weeks. Who's number two in the NFC today? Green Bay? Yeah, I watched them play. Over. Second quarter. You go to the AFC right now. If Kansas City's number one, and I got my Herd hierarchy top of next hour, I got an argument. Tennessee matches up with them. Pittsburgh does. We know Baltimore's feisty. I mean, it's what? Like Trent Dilfer talked about this yesterday. It's the accountability, the passion of Brady and LeBron, and the accountability to demand you are all in. You are completely committed to winning basketball.
He's the ultimate fire breather. I mean, Tom Brady elevates. We talked about last week. This is elevate your team. Elevate your entire organization, your entire city. He's going to demand excellence every second of every day. And if you don't join him, you're going to be out of there. You're not going to be playing much. And look what he's done to a Bruce Arians, who has forever been a risky head coach. His teams typically have a lot of penalties, a lot of turnovers, no turnovers, two straight weeks. I mean, he's changed the head coach. Nobody changes a culture like Tom Brady.
And it really does remind me of LeBron. For years and years, we talked about all the stars in the West. But the minute LeBron gets over and he's healthy and gets AD, you see all the holes. You see all the holes. You look at, same with Saban. We always bragged about the SEC, and then Saban gets there, and you're like, wow, Tennessee and Auburn are really dysfunctional. Oh, God, so is Florida. Georgia's talented, but never quite has the coach Alabama does. And suddenly they all look really good unless you compare them to great and say, but then it's like they're not really that competitive. And the West wasn't really that competitive. I don't even know who the second best team in the NFC is now. I think it's Green Bay. I think. I saw them play. It wasn't competitive. I mean, take the Saints game out. No preseason. It was Tom and a bunch of guys he'd never seen before. They played poorly against Chicago. And that was the moment that Tom said, okay, we're going to be a little feistier here and a little more demanding and be a little more accountable. The good times are over. It's time to ratchet it up. And this morning, I don't think anybody's close.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Most of America tolerates me. I'm going to ask John Goulet and Joy Taylor to tolerate my theory here. I've thought about this a lot. If you listen to me when I started my career back in Portland, I've talked about this. I talked about it at the other network. I talk about it occasionally here. I believe what I'm going to say is true, and I've spent more time in my life than I care to admit talking about this. Teams become their cities. They do. What do you know? Chicago stinks on offense my entire life. What do you know? The Rams, most of their good players, outside of Aaron Donald, are on offense. Every single Charger team that was any good in my life, it's a beach city, was all about offense. LA's always got good quarterbacks. Go back to Vince Ferragamo. Never been a problem. Chicago has always been about defense because Chicago's in the Midwest, and the Midwest is tough, and Chicago's blue-collar, and I love that city. Working class, tough guys, and the fans love it, and that's what sells tickets, and that's what guys talk about over draft beers. Chicago's tough. The weather's tough. You got to be tough to live in Chicago. You don't have to be tough to live here. It's 72 degrees with a breeze at my house every day. Mojitos every day. It's easy living. In Los Angeles, you are fired as a general manager if you don't understand that it's a distracted market with mountains and a beach and pro college sports. You'll be fired. But Tom Telesco of the Chargers and Les Snead of the Rams, man, they can draft offensive guys. If they couldn't, they'd be fired. Ryan Pace has got a problem. He's the GM of the Bears. And in that city, it's become an offensive league. He's got no feel for offense. It's not a Matt Nagy issue. He'd be unemployed 5 minutes. Chicago has, my whole life, has no feel for offense. That's not what the city is. The city's about hard work, head down, crappy weather, overcoming. Los Angeles, Jeff Fisher worked in St. Louis. He looked like a dinosaur an hour into Los Angeles. Nobody's selling defense here. Even Pete Carroll was a defensive coach. He was flash. Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, the wide receiver, they were a flash program. This is a distracted market. LA is a home of stars. You need stars. It's distracted. You won't get people to games. If you can't draft them, you're out. We'll get a new guy. That's why Kawhi is such a weird fit with the Clippers. He doesn't talk. He's more about defense than offense. Will it work? We'll see. But Chicago has no feel for offense. They never have. They traded Khalil Mack for picks, right? They got Khalil Mack, and they gave up picks. The Raiders, a West Coast team, California team, went and got a bunch of good offensive players because that's what the Niners were about with Bill Walsh. And that's what John Gruden's about. And it's what the Rams are about. And now the Chargers go out and get Justin Herbert, and that's what they're about. And Seattle's got a bad defense again, and they're about offense and Russell Wilson. And Arizona's about offense. That's the West. It's distracted. We got college, pro sports, beach, mountains. You got to sell tickets. Pro teams everywhere. College teams everywhere. But in the Midwest, I know you think it's crazy. There's never been a great Laker team, a great Laker team that wasn't flashy. There's never been a great Detroit Pistons team that hasn't been tough. The bad boys. They were always defined by Boston's the same way. Boston's a tough town. Got to punch you right in the forehead in Boston if you disagree on politics. Boston's Belichick, you know, you say Brady, but they were really built. They always had great defenses. Ask Tom Brady. They didn't always have great offenses. Randy Moss, Welker, and Brady was that 2 to 3 year window. It was led by offense. It's always been led by defense. First 6 years, last four. So the reality is Chicago's got no feel for offense. They haven't my entire life. Their defense outscores their offense. That's who they are. And to me, they've got to go. They got to coach. The only two things offensively they have, Allen Robinson and Matt Nagy, they got to get a new GM. They got to turn this franchise upside down. The league has changed. They got to go become offense. They got to think more West. They've got to think more Sunshine. This, you know, Mike Ditka's popular there. Tough guy. All the Chicago legends. You go on that Bears team. What were they about? Defense. Even their quarterback was headbutting people. That sells in Chicago. But the league has changed. They got to start over in the front office. You keep Matt Nagy. You keep Allen Robinson. Certain organizations have a feel for one side of the ball. New England's always had a feel for defense with Belichick. But even Seattle, a West Coast team, Pete Carroll's defense, what are they? It's all offense. I think Chicago, Nagy, Allen Robinson, keep everything else. They got no feel for it. What a shock. They get Khalil Mack. The Raiders get all offense. Their defense 2 years later in Chicago carries the team. Again, it always does. Maybe I'm nuts. I think about this stuff.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app. Herd Hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to Colin. Number 10.
Arizona. I know we're all loving Arizona because they have two big primetime wins in the last 8 days. They're still really inconsistent, but they're fun. Kyler Murray's tied for the most rushing touchdowns in the NFL. They're fun. I get it. But Dallas is horrible, and Seattle's defense is the only one in the league that's worse. They're really good against bad defenses, that we can say. They've won 7 of their last 10. They deserve to be on this list. Let's just bring it down a little. It's been 2 games in primetime. Cowboys defense, Seahawks defense. They make everybody look great. Cam looked great against Seattle. New England looked great against Seattle. Let's put them at 10 and not go crazy.
Number 9.
I had the Rams here last week. I bet them last night. Had a winning blazing 5-week, by the way, 3-2. I like the Rams. I think their offensive and defensive lines are playing a little better than people think. They're number 2 in scoring defense. Now, some of that is who they've played. But the only team to allow fewer than 20 points in 5 games this year. They replaced the defensive coordinator. And I love their weapons. They're a team that can, I think, more than previous years with McVay, they can make halftime adjustments. I think Jared Goff is playing very well in second halves. They've been a slow starting team, but I like what they're doing after half. This is a very good football team, and I think they proved it last night.
Number 8.
Seattle. Listen, settle down, Arizona. I know you beat them. Seattle controlled most of that football game. If not for a personal foul penalty on a special teams play, they win that game in regulation. It was the first loss for Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson when leading by 4-plus points at halftime. It's not going to happen again. Their defense, though, is atrocious. And I do think they've got to make a move. Go get an Everson Griffin, a J.J. Watt. They've got to make a move. You cannot win a Super Bowl with this defense. Jamal Adams is tied for the lead in sacks. He's got 2. Myles Garrett has 9. They need a pass rush or they're a limited team.
Number 7.
Green Bay has a better defense, and I'm going to put them here at number 7. I think they play great when they're comfortable. Once again, Aaron Rodgers, 3rd game this year, 4 touchdowns, no picks. They were my bet of the year in the NFL. They're very good. But I have seen too many times physical teams line up with them and push them around. So I'm just going to keep them in this 6-7 spot until they change my mind and beat a physical team.
Number 6.
The 49ers. Now, this may last 1 week because they are falling apart physically. And Jimmy G's got the fewest air yards of anybody in the league quarterbacking. Some of that, though, frankly, is Kyle Shanahan. That's just what he does. I really like this team. I like their coach. I like their quarterback. I like their operations. But, I mean, good God. We're going to know. They're at Seattle and they face Green Bay. So the next 2 weeks, we're going to know a lot. Raheem Mostert's hurt. Jeff Wilson hurt. Tevin Coleman hurt. Debo Samuel hurt. They already have Bosa out. It's just, at some point, injuries are an issue. But I'm going to put them ahead of Green Bay for a week because I think if they met and they could be, I think if they had met last weekend, I would have taken the Niners to beat them.
Number 5.
It gets real close here. Inches, not feet. I'll put Tennessee. They miss a field goal or they go to overtime and probably beat Pittsburgh. Their third down defense is why I put them at 5. They really struggle to get people off the field on third down. And a lot of that is because they don't have a pass rush. You know, they just don't. They do so many things well. Really good coach. Hey, Ryan Tannehill, 14-5 since becoming the starter last year, week 7. He's a different player. But until they get better consistently on third down in the pass rush, I put them at 5.
Number 4.
back and forth on this and the Baltimore Ravens, but the Ravens did go out and get a defensive end that's going to upgrade their pass rush. They have the number one scoring defense. Some of that is who they played, but they have the number one rushing offense. I still think this is a very good team. They're coming off a bye. They're favored over the Steelers. I think, you know, we're getting into this, you know, Lamar can't play from behind. Well, he does have a winning record. He's won 64% of his NFL games when he trails at any point. Now, if you trail Derrick Henry late, it may be a little different than trailing everybody else late. Let's not bury them yet. I still love their roster. I love their coach. Lamar is still uniquely, bizarrely gifted. I still think it's a Super Bowl potential team.
Number three.
The Steelers. I think it's the best constructed roster in the NFL. In fact, I think their weakness is Big Ben. Some of his throws are, to me, mind-boggling. That throw against Tennessee late. What are you doing? You've been in this league now for like 15 years. I like their running back. James Conner's better than people think. Their front seven's unbelievable. Minkah Fitzpatrick. I like everything about him. I worry that Big Ben and Mike Tomlin, I mean, they're made for each other. They're just a little reckless. And that you can get away with all that alpha stuff, but I do wonder late in the season against a Kansas City or a Tennessee that appear more buttoned up. But in terms of a constructed roster, nothing I don't like about it. They got receivers. They always have receivers. Offensive line, pass rush, TJ Watt. Is he a top 15 player in the league now? I mean, they are loaded.
Number two.
Kansas City. And I love them right now because they're not as reliant on Patrick Mahomes. Special teams are excellent. Defense is playing well. This is why the Le'Veon Bell thing made sense to me. Andy Reid's figured it out here. Like, I'm not going to have this kid throwing 39 times a game. I'm not going to have him. Because if you're paying him, then you can't have a perfect offensive line and all the weapons. They're becoming more physical, and I love that about them, but they're not as physical as the number one team.
Number one.
Is Tampa. First of all, point differential, which is a thing Vegas cares about, number one in the league. Yardage differential, number one in the league. Sack differential, number two in the league, meaning they protect Tom and they get to yours. I think they can beat you physically. They can beat you with speed. They can beat you with smarts. They can beat you with experience. They can beat you over the top. They can pound the football. They're doing this without Leonard Fournette. Like, they're doing this right now without Mike Evans playing much and Chris Godwin. They're doing this not healthy. I think their linebacking core is the fastest linebacking core I have seen in years. So Tampa's my number one team in the NFL.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Joy and I, before the last draft, we both liked Burrow. Joy loved Burrow, and I liked him. And then I loved Tua, and she liked him. But both of us said on Justin Herbert, we kept saying, we don't understand the critics. He got better every year. He won the academic Heisman. He was like a 4-point biology major. Everybody liked him. And then we watched the Rose Bowl and we're like, we don't understand. Like, what is everybody? He looks like Trevor Lawrence, like big, strong kid. So he goes to the Chargers and we're kind of waiting, Tyrod Taylor. And then one day I turn the television on and they say, I'm on my couch. And they're like, oh, Justin Herbert's starting. He was given a heads up 5 minutes ago. And you're like, oh, this is going to be rough. He was fantastic. Patrick Mahomes. He's been evacuated, by the way. He's down in Orange County. He's been evacuated. He's safe. He and his two roommates now are, I imagine, it's in an apartment somewhere in Orange County. We got fires here in Yorba Linda and in Orange County, and he is joining us, Justin Herbert. Number six pick, the Rose Bowl MVP. First of all, I'm glad you're safe. So, great to see you. You're playing the Chiefs, and you're probably looking at Patrick Mahomes over there. Well, that guy's unbelievable. And then somebody taps you on the shoulder and says, hey, Justin, you're playing. Was it literally like that?
First off, thanks for having me.
You bet.
Big fan of the show, and it was like that. Honestly, we were going down the sideline. I was ready to get to cheer on the offense. I was saying, let's go, O. Coach Lynn comes up to me and says, Justin, you're going in. And I just didn't really know what to say at that time. And then Coach Steichen and Coach Hamilton, offensive coordinator and quarterback coach, they come up to me, and I'm like, wow, this is really weird. Really real. I'm going in. I just had to knock this smile off my face, and I was just so excited to get out there, and it was a really cool moment.
Yeah. Like, now, and what's interesting is, if I recall, I thought you sailed a ball early, but I thought you made a couple of throws up the sideline, And I was thinking to myself, oh, my emotions would be coming out of my heart would come out of my uniform. As you were playing in the first series or two, how did you bring it down? Because obviously, I mean, you got a big arm to begin with. That thing, you got testosterone, emotion going through you like crazy. Were you sitting there thinking, okay, don't overthrow everybody. You're highly emotional. I mean, take me to what it was like.
Oh, that's a great point. I went out there and I was just so excited to be out there. And that first pass to Keenan Allen on the sideline, I threw that about as hard as I could have. And it was probably 5 feet over his head. But after that, I kind of settled down and realized, just go out there, have fun, play your game, and good things will happen.
You know, at Oregon, I kind of felt watching you that, listen, they didn't have a backup ready to be you. And they were kind of playing kind of at a national championship level. So they kind of protected you a little. Then in the Rose Bowl, they're like, okay, kid, go play. They ran you a lot. And it was interesting because some people, the criticism of you was, well, the offense is conservative. And I'm like, well, I watched the Rose Bowl, and he's running all over the field making Wisconsin guys miss. When people, the critics, were saying, Justin, he, I don't know if he has it. Did you hear the critics, TV shows, did you hear it? Did it affect you? What did you think of it?
I think we did a great job at the University of Oregon of shutting all that extra noise out. And that was one of our biggest focuses, was just know what's going on in the building, in the program, and leave it at that. And all the people on the outside, they're not with you when you're lifting at 6 a.m. or at practice. And so we did a great job of just kind of staying in building and listening to our coaches and our teammates and kind of things like that.
You are a quarterback. I think it's in your DNA. You like to air it out. You're not a finesse. You like to air it out. Is it with Anthony Lynn in every start? There's a balance there, Justin. You've got a big-time arm. And sometimes the downside to that is you'll try to squeeze a ball into a space that, like, an average arm guy could not. Is that something you and Anthony talk about? You've got this incredible weapon, but sometimes it becomes a burden because you can make every throw.
All the time. That's one of those things that, because I feel so confident in my arm that sometimes I wait and I'm late over the middle. And it's all about those anticipation throws where, you get it out on the hitch or before the plant. And I think sometimes, I rely on my arm too much. And so that's just part of learning. And Coach Hamilton has done a great job with me of kind of talking that through. And we've worked on that a lot. So I think I've progressed a bunch and I've still got plenty of room to grow.
So this is a real dorky question, but I'm a dorky guy, so I get one. So you were on the field with Tom Brady. I cannot imagine. You're a young guy. You play at Oregon. You're in the NFL. And about an hour later, after Mahomes, you get Tom Brady. Was there ever just a moment when you were like, I'm on a football field with Tom Brady? Like one moment of that?
Pre-game, yeah. I was out there. I was warming up. And I saw him come out on the field. And I just kind of watched him for 5 minutes, just seeing what he was doing. And got so much to learn from the guy, and he's had so much success, and I've always been a big fan of his, so it was really cool to be able to line up across him.
So college to pro, if you were to give advice to a college quarterback, a Trevor Lawrence, a Justin Fields, a Trey Lance, on reading defenses, on the speed of the game, what are one or two, because it's obviously working for you, what are one or two pieces of advice that maybe you got, maybe you didn't, that you would give to young quarterbacks about the transition college to pro?
Yeah, I would say not to overthink things. You have to go out there and you have to play relaxed. And that's where film study and all of those comes in and being able to watch that throughout the week. But when you get to Sunday, you have to relax out there. You have to go out there and have fun. Trust your instincts and go out there and just rip the ball. And I think that's probably one of the biggest pieces of advice that I've been given.
I always think it's really hard to be a rookie quarterback and play. Joe Burrow, similarly, that quarterback is a leadership position. Now at Oregon, you were the leader. You'd been there. You'd been accomplished. So guys would listen to you. There's constantly young players. In the NFL, you're like one of the youngest guys in the room, and yet organizations want quarterbacks to lead. Is it different or challenging to be one of the youngest guys and yet the face of a business, a face of an organization?
It's definitely tough, but I think it's a great opportunity. And kind of heading into this year, I knew that it's going to come with the position. And so being genuine, being myself, going out there and just hanging out with the guys and talking with them, I think that's a great way of getting to know them and being comfortable with them. And I know they can come to me for anything, and just like I can go to them for anything. And, you know, even though I've only been here for a couple of weeks, I feel like we've got a really close locker room, and I'm just really happy to be in this spot.
The two loudest college football stadiums I've ever been in, Gainesville, Florida, the Gators, and Autzen Stadium in Oregon. It's a zoo. It's nuts. You can't hear yourself talk. Now you're playing in empty stadiums. It's got to be weird, right?
It is a little weird, but honestly, I think it might be better. It just kind of seems like practice. And so you go out there and you got two teams playing, but it's just like practice. So you go out there and you execute and you have fun and you don't really have to worry about all the extra stuff going on around you. But I mean, it would be great with fans, but either way, we're having fun out there.
Listen, you also are in a tough spot. Tyrod Taylor is one of the most respected light guys in the league. He's a total pro. You're the young guy. You come in. That's not easy, Justin. That's a tough, tough spot to be in. Is it okay, the relationship, and you kind of walk in? I mean, this situation, you had a veteran. He was starting. There's an incident. How's that working?
He's been an incredible teammate. He's been awesome in the locker room, and he's one of those guys that I look up to so much. And he's always there on the sideline helping out, giving advice. And even when we're watching film together, he's a great guy to have in your locker room, and one of the best guys that I've ever met.
So, by the way, Joy, so Justin, when Justin was a kid, Justin would get in your – was it your dad's car or your grandpa's car?
My grandpa's garage, actually. And he'd just have it playing on the radio.
Yeah, his grandpa really
listens to you.
He likes my show. Thank you very much, Mr. – Yeah, that's why Justin's got a 4-point student, is all these years of wisdom.
Exactly.
Hey, you're so much fun to watch. I'm so happy for you. Everybody in Oregon is. And good luck, kid. Watching for a long time. Thank you so much, Justin.